On the move again, Sri Lanka's president is now believed to be bound for Singapore. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Sasha Twining, in for Victoria Craig. Good morning. There's more uncertainty and turmoil today for Sri Lanka, with the new acting president ordering the military to do whatever is necessary to restore order in the bankrupt country. Meanwhile, Gotabaya Rajapaksa, who has still not officially stood down from the top job, is believed to be on a plane heading from the Maldives, where he fled yesterday, to Singapore. The BBC's Monica Miller is there.
What we do know is that President Gotabaya Rajapaksa, his wife and bodyguards, sources have told the BBC that he has boarded a Saudi Airlines flight to Singapore. However, his destination is unknown beyond that, if he's going to stay here or he will continue on.
Why Singapore, though?
That's a very good question. This may be just a logistical issue for the president. Officials here are being incredibly tight-lipped about what his status is and how long he is going to stay. So it's really anybody's guess why he would pick Singapore. They do have an extradition process, Singapore does, with Sri Lanka. But one thing Singapore does have is it is illegal to protest in this country unless you have a permit, and that is extremely hard to get. So one idea was that maybe if he came here, the government might be able to protect him. But again, they are not saying that that is the case, and it is unclear where he will go after this.
Because he hasn't officially resigned yet, so I'm guessing he still holds certain privileges because of that.
Yes, he was supposed to have handed in, or he said he was going to hand in his resignation on Wednesday, but that never happened. You know, it's anyone's guess, really, what the Singaporean government can do. He still has immunity from prosecution in any form as a sitting president. So everyone is watching very closely to see if he's going to hand in those papers anytime soon.
Protesters in Sri Lanka say he should be made accountable for what has happened in that country, including alleged corruption. I mean, is there any possibility that Singapore could get involved in that?
You know, it's something that politically, would they stick their neck out for him? Who knows? There is a lot of negotiations that we feel are going on behind the scenes. But again, they have given absolutely no indication whether they will let him stay or if he's chosen for this to be his final destination.
Monica Miller in Singapore, thank you.
Thank you, Sasha.
Let's look at the markets. And in currencies, the euro is near parity with the dollar today after it dipped down below that level on Wednesday for the first time in some 20 years. That's with ongoing fears of the fallout from the war in Ukraine. And two countries have increased their interest rates in surprise moves. The Bank of Canada by a full percentage point and the Philippines by three quarters. Well, let's move now to Ukraine and the challenges of moving 20 million tons of grain. The vital food has been stuck in warehouses since the start of Russia's invasion. Turkey now says there's been progress in direct talks with the two countries, with a proposed coordination centre to be set up in Istanbul. Meanwhile, Romania has agreed to let Ukraine use an environmentally sensitive canal as another route out. Here's the BBC's Joe Inwood on the Turkish talks.
This is not a done deal, but it seems significant progress has been made in these initial talks. Representatives from Russia, Ukraine, Turkey and the United Nations have been discussing ways to get agricultural product out of Ukraine's blockaded ports and ease the global food crisis sparked by the conflict. A system will be put in place in Turkey to check exports and ensure the safety of ships. The UN would have a monitoring role, with the Secretary General Antonio Guterres hailing it as a critical step forward.
The BBC's Joe Inwood in Kyiv. A major new study suggests that Arabs are losing faith in democracy to deliver economic stability across the Middle East and North Africa. The research was conducted for BBC Arabic by the Arab Barometer Network. Here's the BBC, Jesse Williams.
According to the Economist Intelligence Unit's Democracy Index, most of the Arab world is classed as authoritarian. Only Tunisia and Morocco are classed as what they call hybrid regimes, which is a mix of autocratic features with democratic ones. Tunisia was actually recently classed as a flawed democracy, but slid back into a hybrid regime.
Tell me, what do citizens feel about democracy across the Arab world? What did the study uncover?
In six countries, that was Tunisia, Sudan, Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq and Libya, as well as the Palestinian territories, half or more say the country's economy is weak under a democratic system. And this has increased quite significantly in all places surveyed since 2018. There's this growing perception that democracy is not a perfect form of government and it won't fix everything. Tunisia, so the birthplace of the so-called Arab Spring, and the only country where there was some sort of lasting democratic system in place, they are sliding deeper into authoritarianism, with 8 in 10 of those surveyed agreeing with the statement that their country needs a leader who can bend the rules if necessary to get things done.
So what is it that has prompted this shift in views?
I think it's a combination of things. I think, you know, the COVID pandemic, the war in Ukraine, there's, you know, conflict in some of these countries that were surveyed, and decades of corruption and mismanagement of the economy. There's also a huge problem with food insecurity. More than 1 in 3 people in every country surveyed agree with the statement that they ran out of food over the past year before they next had sufficient funds to buy more. So all of these things are kind of building up and people are frustrated with the current political systems.
Well, given all that you have said, do we have any idea how citizens view the future in their respective countries?
Overall, most people don't expect the economic situation in their country will improve in the next few years. However, there was some optimism. In 6 countries, over a third of citizens say the situation will be better or somewhat better in the coming 2 to 3 years. Interestingly, in Tunisia, people were actually the most optimistic, with 61% saying things will be much better or somewhat better in a few years' time. So there is some optimism.
Jessie Williams, thank you very much.
Thank you.
In London, I'm Sasha Twining with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.